freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Wire, you are. And Brooke, you are.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk. Let the fire!
Oh, man, what a weekend in women's college basketball. Once again, story of the day in all of sports is what we all witnessed. First on Friday night and then again yesterday afternoon, an opportunity to watch a sport that has never seen popularity quite like this. It was 12 million plus average for the Elite Eight. Brock, that number grew to over 14 million on Friday night. I don't know what it's going to be for yesterday. I would imagine 16 plus have ended up being the average on ABC. And it all delivered. All the basketball we watched was incredible. It didn't all come down to the wire, but all the games were very good. They were incredibly well played. It was a blast to watch. I had so much fun.
I know you started the show an hour ago, right? And I have pity for you and your soul and Maura and Justin as well.
Thank you.
But this is now the second time that you and I, in the course of less than 2 weeks, have started our time together.
Yeah.
Talking college women's basketball. Did you have that in your time capsule 15 years ago when we started?
I did not.
You did not?
No, I didn't. I mean, look, I've my eyes have been opened. What can I tell you? I mean, like, you know, when things change and the game has changed, women's college hoop has changed. And then maybe more importantly, no, not more importantly, similarly, men's college hoops has changed also. And while one has changed for the better, the other has changed for the worse.
Mm-hmm.
And my biggest observation of watching so much of it here over the last couple of weeks, Brock, is that it reminded me of much of the time that I loved watching basketball, the 80s, 90s, early 2000s.
Yep.
Less one-on-one ball,
yep.
More than just three-pointers and dunks, legit effort everywhere on the court, tremendous passing, and the opportunity to get to know the players over a couple of seasons rather than just all one and done.
Yep.
Throw all of those things together and then add in that just like when you were watching basketball during that time, having a big person turned out to be the difference maker. And Cardoso was the difference maker yesterday.
She was amazing. Just living this life and having lived it for 20-some years, first starting out watching Molly play, and then obviously my girls over the last 10, 15 years and their different journeys and everything else. So the other thing that you, and I was chatting with a pastor friend of mine about this on the plane yesterday, and he never had any real background with women's basketball, right? And it's almost like the eyes are opening, like, really? Like, wow.
Yeah.
Well, that's amazing. Like, oh my gosh. Is college basketball, women's basketball, like typecast recruits more than any other program, and they build around their identity. Their team builds are remarkable. You talk about and you love like team build.
Yep.
Like this is the way we're going to build it, right? And kudos to the guy coaching tonight, Coach Hurley. I was listening to a great clip on him. He's like, we turn down talent all the time. Neon light talent. Guys that can jump out of the gym. Guys that, you know, have tremendous measurables, but they don't have like the heart and they don't have the winning mentality that we look for. And he's really been able to recruit to the exact way that he wants it. Women's basketball does the same. Look at these teams, man. They're built so differently, right? Iowa's built so much differently than South Carolina's built differently than UConn's built differently than you can go around the country, right? This coach down in Texas is just a defensive grinder, and he just finds the grittiest, toughest defenders in the AAU world. Like, and you just know the way they're going to build it. So you kind of add those, and then that just builds in natural, great storylines and differences. They're not all doing the same. They're not all dunking and shooting threes. They're built differently.
Yeah.
They have to be built differently, and it's been really cool to watch process.
What was your girls' reaction?
Oh, they too want a Caitlin. Yeah.
But just in general, I mean, like, what was their reaction to the popularity, to the surge, to the story, to all of it?
Well, yeah, a little different. Haley was watching and went to a movie Friday night, so she gets away from it.
Haley's done.
Yes.
We're done.
Yeah. It's Macy's like obviously all in, and then she'll go to the gym and she'll try to do some of the stuff that Caitlin's capable of doing and keep extending her range and growing her game and growing her prowess and all of that stuff. So, yeah, I think everybody kind of consumes it in their own way. Not to say that Haley wasn't all in yesterday and watching it and having a root and interest and fun. And, you know, it's been neat too, Saul. We've seen a lot of these girls over the AAU trail the last 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Never saw Caitlin. She was a little ahead of us, but, you know, got to see a lot of the gals play and develop. And it's just
the quality of play. Did you see some of the freshmen from South Carolina play at all?
Oh, yeah.
Tess Johnson was nasty.
Oh, she was awesome.
Oh, my gosh. Did she have a good game yesterday?
And the Kitts girl grew up, you know, they grew up in Puyallup. You know, I knew her. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, I knew her dad, Jason Kitts, was a couple years behind me in school at Puyallup High School. And he knew that she was a pretty remarkable talent. So in junior high, they moved to Florida to play on, you know, some pretty elite teams down there.
Wow.
And so, yeah, kind of a
she had
kind
a heck of a game yesterday,
world.
Too.
She sure did, man. Yeah. I think one of the biggest differences, and just sitting, we were in a sports bar yesterday watching the first half of it, and just watching the bar just explode. And, you know, just people just with excitement of just like, wow, look at that dime. Wow, look at that thread. Just some total strangers fist bumping me. Like, can you believe that? You know, look at that play. So
isn't that crazy?
It was just, yeah. I mean, to think 15 years ago, Saul, when we was starting our show, like, yeah, we're going to be doing this. We're going to be talking about it. We're going to be invested. And more importantly, 14, 15, 16 million people are going to watch it. And it's going to be a destination to see.
I got a lot of thoughts, and we can go through this. Honestly, we could spend hours on this, but let me just give you a couple people that I wanted to just throw some props to who were just awesome this weekend or throughout. The first, obviously, is Caitlin Clark. I mean, she was held down, I guess, in each of the last two games by incredible defensive performances, which I'm going to get to in a moment. And she still finds ways, even when she's not scoring, to affect the game. And so many, her
elevates.
Passing is ridiculous.
Yep.
That team around her is not very good.
No.
And what
no.
she does to elevate all of them was really, I thought, incredible. And then she says all the right things as well.
I think more than anything, yeah, people will probably remember our, you know, two Final Fours and things like that. But people aren't going to remember every single win or every single loss. I think they're just going to, you know, remember the moments that they shared at one of our games or watching on TV or how excited their young daughter or son got about, you know, watching women's basketball. I think that's pretty cool.
And we spent some time on that on Friday, Brock, while you were out, saying, hey, I love that she says daughters and sons. It's not just making, you know, having your daughters watch.
Nope.
It's having your sons watch and them from a very early age believe that this is something to be appreciated, something
totally.
That we were not given when we were kids.
Yeah, if I had to play Caitlin in that seventh grade team, if she was a seventh grader, I'd have lost.
Yeah.
Probably one-on-one, I would have lost.
Yes.
She'd be just dropping threes from 30, 35 feet.
Third little
back
step
then.
Back? You got no chance.
No chance.
She's unbelievable. So huge props to her. Huge props to Camila Cardoso. She was a total game changer.
Sheesh.
I mean.
So athletic. For 6'7", like in the past, and we've seen 6'5". I think Molly back in the day, there was a gal at Oregon that was 6'5". But, you know, up and down the court a couple times and it's done. That gal is just a gazelle. It's 6'7". I mean,
amazing.
Just a tremendous athlete.
And she's not like a like stick thin 6'7".
Mm-mm.
Like she's got some size to her. She was remarkable to watch. I mentioned both Nika Mule and Raven Johnson, both of whom their defense was awesome. Frustrating Clark. A little shout out to Paige Beckers. Very classy, I thought, after their loss, and especially with some of the controversy. What did you make of the call?
Exactly
on
what
Edwards?
You did. I know we're going to get to this a little bit later, but I thought you've phrased it and wrote it is normal. Like, you're a tremendous writer.
Thank you.
I mean, just a tremendous order.
Nice of you to say.
Yeah, very well done. And I think I agreed with every sentiment you said. It was absolutely a foul. She was moving. She extended her arm. It was absolutely a foul. Do you hate it? See it called in the final seconds. You hate seeing it called in the final seconds. But it would have given, you know, them an advantage.
Right.
I mean, it just totally impeded her ability to get around it. Not a little bit. It was a lot. So, yeah, it was just kind of a bummer that circumstance existed.
And then finally, I mean, Dawn Staley, oh, my gosh. I mean, she is just, I mean, just the way she handles herself. First of all, her coaching is obviously phenomenal. I thought both coaches did a really great job. Bluter's an interesting one. I'm kind of curious to see where her career takes her because she sort of stumbled into Caitlin Clark.
Do you want a quick little, well, she's been doing it a long time, winning, not at this level. You want a quick little anecdote that's perfectly sums up Lisa Bluter?
Yeah.
We were on the recruiting trail flying through Denver somewhere, and she's at the gate with us, and it's like 9 in the morning. And she's eating a McDonald's cheeseburger. And I was like, you know what? God bless her. I love this lady.
Did you talk to her?
Oh, yeah. Talk to her. And she's just as down to earth as it possibly is. But if you can eat a McDonald's cheeseburger at like 9:30 in the morning, you're just awesome.
Yeah.
So
just an actual cheeseburger, not like a double cheeseburger, just like the actual like thin
little
patty.
I didn't study it that closely, but it was certainly not a morning breakfast sandwich.
Wow.
And, you know, they get on the road.
I can appreciate that.
Yeah. I have a super amount of appreciation.
And then, again, Dawn Staley, just who wouldn't want to play for her?
Mm-hmm.
the class, the interest in each person on her team, the ability.
The buy-in she creates. Wow. Man, she, those girls are all bought in, all 10 of them dogs, and most of them alphas. And the ability to get them to all play together is remarkable. Yeah. It's awesome.
Pretty cool. All right. Well, it was a phenomenal weekend. And then she showed the class at the end. The whole deal. It was great. It was so much fun. Loved watching it yesterday with Cecily and Heather. We had a really good time.
Cecily crying, or was she all right?
She was just fine. Yeah. I think
got
if it
to
had
top
been,
of the mountain.
I think if it had been a, first of all, if it happened on Friday, or if it had been like a last second Jay or something.
Yep. Been tough.
But I think like she had the whole game to process that. Yeah. This isn't. Yeah, the other team's just better.
That's right.
Just in every conceivable way. All right. We will get to the Mariners coming up in 20 minutes. I'll ask a question that's going to annoy a lot of you. That is in 20 after everything you need to know next on Brock and Salk.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, it was not a total loss this weekend, Brock, but it sure wasn't pretty. The Mariners dropped another series, this time in Milwaukee. The bats, lousy. The arms, not great. The relievers, problematic. The defense, awful once again. Put it all together, and you end up dropping 2 out of 3. I thought this was an interesting quote from Scott Servais, who was asked about the Brewers and what they did well.
They did not chase. There was a number of edge pitches in this series the Brewers just didn't swing at. Kind of starting with Contreras. Their catcher had an awesome series. Really impressive player, and we didn't do hardly anything to control him at all.
Scott, how much do you have to look at that? That's something that you guys try to do, too.
Yes, it is. It's something that you pride yourself in when you got a group that's buying into like that. We haven't been there yet.
That's another example of the word buy-in, right? Aaron Goldsmith joined us last week and said, yeah, maybe only 2 or 3 guys seem to really be bought into this offensive system. And then I hear Scott say that. I don't know. That's going to kind of stick with me a little bit. Don't like it.
Do you feel like you're fortunate to be 4-6?
Yo, very.
I mean, you're minus 21 run differential. That's actually worse now than the Oakland A's in your division. Only the Chicago White Sox, who are 1-8, are at minus 26. You're sitting there, and that's thankful, for a 2-run home run, in the ninth inning yesterday. There's another minus 23. Like, some of these games, a bunch of them not competitive.
Watching them, I'm surprised they are not 2-8 or 3-7.
Correct.
That's sort of what it feels like they've played.
Yes.
That kind of ball. Thankfully, look, they've gotten three. Three of those wins
great
have
starts.
Come off of their great starts, right? Yep. Great one from Kirby, great one from Gilbert, and now one awesome one from Bryce Miller, who was absolutely dominant on Saturday and kind of got back to doing what he needs to do and finding ways to get lefties out, which was fantastic. That split finger pitch was awesome. But they're not hitting, man. They're not hitting for any power. Julio, Cal, Garver combined 0 JP. Home runs. JP hasn't done much of anything, and their defense is
it's a tough watch.
I can't talk about the defense. No, honestly, if you really want to make me mad, let's talk about the Mariner defense.
Let's not.
All right, they're in Toronto tonight for the 1st of 3. Luis Castillo try to get them back on track.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Amazingly, you win that series. Game under 500.
Sure.
Just fine. Congratulations to Dawn Staley, South Carolina. They finish off an undefeated season, Brock. They take the women's championship yesterday. Afterwards, there were so many cool moments. But Dawn Staley, head coach at South Carolina, taking a moment to thank Caitlin Clark. I think that's one people will remember.
I really would just like to say I have to congratulate Iowa on an incredible season. Awesome. And I want to personally thank Caitlin Clark for lifting up our sport. She carried a heavy load for our sport. And it just is not going to stop here on the collegiate tour. But when she is the number one pick in the WNBA draft, she's gonna lift that league up as well. So Caitlin Clark, if you're out there, you are one of the GOATs of our games, that we appreciate you.
What did you like about that?
What did I like about that?
What struck you about that comment?
Well, you could just tell it wasn't a scripted, hey, just want to thank Caitlin and Iowa, right? Mm-hmm. It was, she knows the crown was heavy for Caitlin to play with in every game, the center of attention of the 20,000 that filled it, the game plan of the opposing coach, and to show grace throughout. Sure, she whined at times on the court. You know, there was a bunch of times I turned to Molly. I'm like, gosh, don't you think if Peyton Manning were a basketball player, it would look a lot like Caitlin Clark? I mean, just the way you pass, and he's not a great athlete, not a, you know, some things that are limited, but just, you know, and then the character just saying the right thing all the time. And whether it was last year with Angel Reese, you know, with the ring in her finger, you know, pointing her finger and doing all of that, or, you know, just the Diana Taurasi's taking shots, or people, she don't care, man. Gore-Tex. Like, I'll take the high road. She knows the address to the high road. Don knows the address to the high road. Handle that with incredible, incredible class. And, yeah, man, it was – well, the numbers will come out today, and they will once again, I think, be earth-shattering.
They're going to be pretty, pretty spectacular. The men also played, and they're going to play again tonight.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
Visit time in the NFL, Brock. A couple familiar names in Seattle to at least see what's going on here with the 30 visits. Aaron Wilson reporting that Bo Nix had one with Seattle this weekend. And then Penn State defensive end Chop Robinson is expected to be here as well.
You know, we've had some good success with nicknames around here, like Big Red, Pork Chop Womack. I kind of, you know, this guy's Chop. It's perfect. He's not Pork Chop. He's not a big old dude. He is a twitched up, really, really athletic edge player. As Jim Nagy said on Twitter, I would not expect either of those guys. And like a Bo Nix, once you trade for Sam Howell, the investment they've already made on the edge, Salk, over the last couple years in the draft, and Chenna Nwosu. But you certainly guys that you want to get a read on, want to get a feel for, who, you know, that if they may drop in the draft, if Bo Nix were to drop to the second round, if Chop Robinson were to drop, I don't know, late first round or into that second round, maybe there's a conversation. So, yeah, we'll keep an eye on all of those comings and goings out of the VMAC the next couple weeks.
All right, there you go. That's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. Yeah, it is amazing.
Let me remind you, by the way. Next month, there will be an amazing docuseries coming out. So that's the great thing about this. It doesn't end for college women's basketball yesterday. In about a month, and I've been telling a few people about this, Omaha Productions, Peyton's crew, is going to come out with a same docuseries they did. It will mirror in many ways what they did with Mahomes and Kirk Cousins and Mariota, in that same vein. They have followed the life of the big gal from South Carolina, Caruso, and Caitlin and Kiki out at UCLA. So it's going to be just awesome, awesome, awesome. Because I think all three of them gave tremendous access. So the backstories, the road trips, the arenas, the time with their teammates, all of that stuff's going to be pretty special to see.
Wow. Pretty cool.
Yeah, be really, really cool.
I hope my guy Pete's on there for Pete's Pops. He is a Wisconsin popsicle place that Caitlin apparently loved. Like, they do a special dessert after every game, and apparently they fell in love with Pete's Pops.
I bet so.
So let's hope they make it on there. That'd be very exciting. All right. Brock, coming up
next.
You want
to talk Mariners defense?
No, I'm not going to do that. But I am going to ask a question that's going to annoy a lot of Mariner fans. It's next on Brock and Salk.
You're listening to Brock and Salk,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Here we go, yo. Andrew and Elma weighing in right off the bat here. Brock says, you know what would be really impressive is if Salk could find a question that didn't annoy Mariners fans.
Yeah.
That's an impossible challenge. You know what? You're probably right about that. Thank you, Andrew. You're right.
I don't care. I'm annoying.
But I will ask this question, and I know why it will annoy some people, but I still think it needs to be asked because, yes, there are a lot of things that have gone wrong with the Mariners through the first 10 games of this season. Seriously. Right? I mean, the offense has not been what it's supposed to be. The power's not been what it's supposed to be. The patience not been what it's supposed to be. The contact's not been what it's supposed to be. The pitching's not been what it's supposed to be. The bullpen's not been what it's supposed to be. The defense not been what it's supposed to be. None of it has been very good.
Yes.
And so when I ask this question, I know that there are people who are going to think that this is the only thing I'm focusing on and that I am blaming this person rather than others or everyone for the slow start for the Mariners. That's not true. But the answer to this question is still, in my view, in all likelihood, more important or maybe even interesting than the answers to some of the others. So I'll ask it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think is going on with Julio? Because he has just one extra base hit this year. It was his first at bat of the year.
Right.
His first at bat of the year was a double down the line and right. Since then, he does not have another extra base hit. Scott said over the weekend, his timing's been off. I mean, what, maybe that's a result of missing the start of spring training, but that's been over a month ago, so I'm not buying that.
I'm not buying that.
I don't know what it is, and the reality is it's probably nothing going on with him. We're just waiting for him to catch fire, but maybe the concern here is that through two seasons now and into the third, is this going to be a trend? Not that he starts slow, although this would be the third straight slow start for him, but that his ups are unbelievable.
Correct.
Are his lows going to be really, really low as well? Is that going to be part of who Julio is as a phenomenal baseball player?
Yeah, we talked about this, over the course of the offseason, that the next step for him, because the end game, right, the totals in the end, when you sum it all up over 162, and you look at how the marathon time of 162, pretty awesome. Pretty elite. I mean, the wins above replacement and the August last year was superhuman. I mean, very few humans in the history of the sport have ever done what he did for like that stretch of the marathon. So if you want to continue through this kind of analogy, marathon's what, 26 miles or so? There's 6 months to a baseball season. So, in that 4+ miles, he was superhuman. Like, you just can't do that. You're not supposed to make the game look that easy. You're not supposed to run a 4-minute mile 21 through 25. Like, come on, man. This is not realistic. But then there were other stretches of that marathon that were, whoa, he is dragging. He is really, really dragging, whether it's in clutch moments or, just overall in totality. That was a rough month. Mm-hmm. That was a rough month. And, we talked about that, Salk, and said, hey, man, is this the year where we can just stabilize those peaks and valleys?
Right.
Can we do that? Can we just stabilize those?
Well, you obviously don't want to stabilize the peaks. Let the peaks be the peaks. Have the peaks. Can you find a way to make sure these valleys aren't quite so deep as they've been? And so this is not a question of, is Julio a bad player or anything like that? Of course not. It's, can they find a way, or can he find a way, to when he's not going well, to still, play other parts of his game up enough to be able to keep the valleys from being so low? And by the way, he does some of that. His defense has still been great.
Correct.
He might be the only player on the team who's had a good defensive start to the season. Mm-hmm. His base running and stuff is always very good, although he did run through a stop sign, so you don't love that. But with his speed and with his defense, I would love to see a little bit more patience when he's not going well, right? I'd love to see him just find a way to get on base, take a walk, and then steal second, because that kind of allows him to contribute from a key spot in the lineup, even when he's not hitting or seeing the ball the way he wants to, or his timing's a little bit off.
Do you think he has such a swing? And we used to say this about Nelson Cruz. Right. I mean, are we to the point? I mean, he's a big guy. Nelson was, 240 pounds and a big guy. Yeah. Julio is, 6'3", 230 pounds. There's a lot of, just a lot of movement and a lot of size. Is he just a guy that over time we're just going to have to realize that, there's going to be some of these stretches.
Then
there's going to be stretches where the ball is a beach ball and he is going to look silly playing this game.
Yeah. No, he's going to be streaky. I think, don't you think, right, after 2 years and now seeing it for a third, yes, he's in all likelihood going to be streaky. I'm not against him being streaky. Like, I understand that will be part of who he is as a player. But, I mean, Nelson Cruz, one of the things that made him such a great hitter was his ability to, when he wasn't going great from a power standpoint, to find other ways to keep his batting average up, to get on base. He wasn't going to be able to do the little things with the speed and defense that Julio can, which is why he has a chance to be a much better player than Nelson Cruz was.
Correct.
Because he can honestly do all of it.
So
I'm not concerned that it's not going to come this year. I just would I'd be curious to know kind of what it is that's going on with him, and is there a way for him to just be a little bit more consistent during these downtimes?
Yeah, what did Scott say? It's a little bit of his timing and also like getting set or something at the start of his swing.
I think it was like where his foot comes down.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. But zero home runs in 10 games. I mean, we talked a lot. Also, if we could just elevate the floor a little bit, right? So the valleys aren't quite so deep for those stretches. And then as Paxton said, like, man, I really feel like this is the year now. You're number three at this age where you're just kind of going to grow into even more power, right? That was the, hey, what's the ceiling? 40-40. Well, it's 10 games now, and it's not like he's been robbed at the wall two, three, four times of home runs, or it wasn't as if, you know, the weather was horrendous where he has started in these 10 games. It just hasn't come yet. And then watch, tonight he could hit three bombs in Toronto.
Of course, because these things change on a dime, and all of a sudden everything kind of works back the way it's supposed to. But there are a bunch of issues with the Mariners, clearly, and we're going to go through a lot of that at 8:30. But this one kind of jumps out to me because of just the importance of who Julio is, and because now this is 3 years in a row that we've sort of seen this right at the beginning of the year where you're like,
I'm trying to remember.
Okay here?
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Text toy 866-979-3776. And maybe it was a totally different era, and maybe, you know, they didn't have all the next level numbers then that we do now and data wise. But I'm just kind of curious. I'm trying to remember. Was Griffey streaky? Was Griffey, Ken Griffey Jr., because that to me is the comp. That's the superhuman talent. That's the ability to run and to jump and to move in ways that others can't. That's a prodigious power that we've seen at the home run derbies between those two, right? I mean, that's the kind of, you know, rarefied air and talent that I think a Julio physically has. I'm just trying to remember if Griffey was as I know when he got hot, it was the same thing. Like, wow, this is just silly. There's eight games in a row with a home run, nine games, whatever it was. It was right there at a major league record. I remember that. But I wonder if the floor, right? I mean, it's kind of what we're talking about, right? Like, can we just elevate this floor so we don't have 10, 12, 15 games, you know, where you're slugging 200 and there's just nothing in the middle of that lineup that this lineup really, really desperately needs.
Yeah.
You know, he had Edgar. He had Buehner. You know, he had the Kingdome. You know, he had a supporting cast around him that covered a little bit, that hit a little bit. Even if you look at Dan and Blow and those guys' numbers back in the day, pretty good, pretty good. Supporting cast around Julio right now also, NJP and Polanco, and guys are scuffling and struggling. And as we said, I need to know, man, kind of fortunate to be sitting here at minus 21 run differential and 4-6. In a series, you know, series went away in Toronto from being right there around 500 and coming home.
I know. Yeah. I mean, you know, that's why I spent some time on this with G on Friday, and then a little bit more even earlier this morning.
Did you dance with G, by the way, Thursday night? How'd that go? I saw some of the videos.
Yeah.
I saw some of the videos.
Did you see what he was wearing?
I saw Mora kind of dancing in there. I saw Mora kind of getting into a little bit into the groove.
Yeah.
Salk was dancing
a little bit.
What were you wearing? You had some like fancy design on a sleeve or what was that?
G gave me one. You know, I said that I would wear whatever G gave me. Yeah. And he gave me a hoodie that had like kind of rhinestone skulls.
Yeah, was it bedazzled?
Well, yeah, rhinestone skulls.
It unlocked a dance gene, though, that we didn't expect Salk to have. So it was nice. It really freed him up.
Rhinestone skulls down the arm or the side of it?
Kind of down each side of the front.
Okay. Yeah. You feel good?
I mean, I didn't feel bad. I kind of liked it. Yeah.
I mean
the
good.
Listeners overwhelmingly picked that one. Yes. There were two options.
Yeah. Oh, were there really?
Yeah, the other one looked a lot like Felix's tattoo on his neck. It had sort of an ovary look. And no one, that's just what it looked like. Yeah. No other way to say it. Looked like a reproductive system right there on the shirt.
Yeah.
We went away from that.
Okay.
We
decided. At least he said it was like a Rorschach test.
You can say whatever you want. Sure. I know it looked like.
It was because it was mirrored. So each side was perfectly. Uh-huh. So that's the way that
it looked. Yeah, no, it looked like Felix's neck tattoo.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, that's
fallopian tubes and ovaries, the whole deal.
that's the whole thing. That's the Aries symbol. It's the ram.
You call it whatever you want, man. I know what it looks like. I took health when I was in middle school, and I know what it looks like.
I know.
You can don't try to convince me of anything else. I was trying to. G was asking a lot of questions about baseball and the slow starts and the it's early idea.
Right.
And it dawns on me that maybe it's been misinterpreted a little bit, that when people hear me or others say it's early, they think we're saying it's okay or correct. That it doesn't matter.
Correct.
And I hope that people understand. I'm not saying either of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Does it matter? Yes. Do these games matter as much as the ones in August? Yes, of course they do.
Yep.
No one's ever going to try to convince you of anything other than that. Are we saying that it's fine because they're going to? No,
mm-mm.
Of course not. No one is saying it's fine. They're playing like garbage. Seriously, this has been a terrible, terrible 10-game stretch for the Mariners. They've played really badly, and we're going to discuss a lot of the reasons why, which ones are most important at 8:30. When people say it's early, what they mean is two things. One, how they're playing for these 10 days is not necessarily indicative
correct.
Of how they're going to play for the next 152.
Correct.
And that's because small sample sizes in baseball don't tell us a lot. Mm-hmm. And 10 games, as much as this may frustrate you, is still a small sample size in baseball. So they've played bad, mm-hmm. very bad. They've been awful in almost every phase of the game. And it's a bad thing, and it's not good for their season. But it also doesn't mean they're going to play bad for 152 more games.
That's right.
Right? The other thing, I mean, really, that's the biggest of them. But the other is, okay, so you've watched 10 games, and you say, all right, they stink. I'm done. So what do you think? So that's it? They should give up after mm-hmm. after 10? Mm-hmm. The football team should give up after 1? Basketball team should give up after 5? Mm-hmm. I understand the level of frustration. I'm just as frustrated. They've played terrible baseball.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily understand the frustration with, why would you tell me it's early? Well, it is. Mm-hmm. Because baseball teams go up and down over a series of games.
Yeah. Unfortunately, this start, and we'll talk a whole bunch about this in an hour or so. Unfortunately, Sulky, this start has kind of fueled a bunch of these narratives. Well, it was early for Wong until it wasn't. It was early for Pollock until it wasn't. It was early for whatever that guy was that played left field with a bad neck until it wasn't.
And those things are true.
You know what I'm saying? Yes. So it's just, if you want to go down that road and point to those, you can also point to a number of guys where, well, it's early for Julio will turn it around. You know, it's early for, some of the guys will turn it around. Inevitably, some won't. And then in 50 games, some of them will be on this roster. Some of them won't.
Right. And Dylan Moore, who's had an amazing start to his season, maybe he's not going to keep that up. And maybe he'll go back to being Dylan Moore. I mean, like who he's been throughout his career.
Yep.
I guess that's the thing. I feel like it's important to say, because I know people hear it's early and mm-hmm. they understandably get frustrated by it.
I think you're just placating. Oh, right. You're just placating.
Oh, Salk's fine with it.
Turning down my competitiveness, or telling me not to care. No, 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 no care. Have a high care factor. Listen to us every single morning. Listen to every single game. Have a high care factor. Just can't throw in the towel.
Right.
You just can't make. And I get it. And it's hard. You know, it's a lot of years where this is hard. And this is not the script I am sure that Scott and Jerry and Justin and any of them would have wanted written. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm sure they would much rather be 4-6, and you know, obviously they'd much rather be 8-2. But if they were 4-6, they would much rather have had Polanco hitting,
right.
Some of the new pieces hitting, and a lot of contact and not striking out, and you know, contact in a whole bunch of just inning double plays or some tough luck. It's not been the case.
No,
this has been a tough narrative.
No, I mean, again, they are 4-10 or 4-6. They have probably played 3-7 to 2-8.
2-8.
Kind of
minus 21 would be 2-8.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, you kind of sneaked one out with the JP home run game, and you kind of sneaked one out with the game that Julio won on the final at bat
in the extra innings. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, mm-hmm. Those two probably could have and maybe should have gone away from you, and mm-hmm. you kind of have who you are. You only have 3 quality starts so far this year.
Yep.
Think about that.
Yeah, Luis can get going, man. It's two starts for Luis.
Haven't
been great. You'd sure like to see that stop and put an end to that and be the rock and the ace that come out and go get a quality start and deal and get this team a win.
All right, we'll come back to the Mariners in about 45 minutes at 8:30. Right now, though, Brock, let's ask you 3 good football questions.
This is Brock and Sox Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Heward breaks down 3 football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Sox.
All right, I asked Brady this question on Friday, and then we got even more word that Bo Nix was in town over the weekend for a top 30. They're not called top 30 anymore, by the way. They're just 30 visits.
30 visits.
Brady corrected me on Friday and said Jim Nagy would get mad at us if we said top 30. They're just 30 visits.
They're just 30 visits.
How important are they? What should we read into these?
I think you better be very careful. It's kind of like the first 10 games of a Mariners season. Be very careful scripting out the rest of the 152, and be very careful scripting out, well, because they visited, they're going to sign. I think in many ways, the people that have tried to use Morse code over the years, Salk, and go back in retrospect and look at all of these visits, many times it's been some undrafted guys. It's been some late round guys who are like, oh, okay, they did get a little look-see. Oh, this guy wasn't invited to the combine and they want to get him in-house. Or maybe there's a medical and we want to do further research. Or maybe a Bo Nix could fall into that second round. And, you know, is there a possibility that the value is right in the second round. You know, I saw one of the possible trade proposals for the Seahawks. Maybe we'll dig into this, Salk, in the weeks ahead. We're 2 weeks and 3 days from the draft. Would you trade 16 for two quality second round picks, like 35 and 42? There's a team out there that's got two good top 45 second round picks. I think there's a conversation to be had there. And if you are to go down that road and were to do that, and Bo Nix were to be one of these quarterbacks that would tumble and fall, and if any of them do, I think he would be your candidate, because there were some rough years when the pressure was really, really on. There's a lot of throws that were a lot of gimmies at Oregon the last couple of years that are not gimmies. There was a Senior Bowl that was underwhelming, right? There's some stuff there. So don't read too much into it. Don't write the whole novel based on some of this plot over these 30 visits. But there will be times, especially in the rearview mirror, that we can connect a few dots.
All right, question number two. So Bill Belichick was in town this weekend for the UW coaches.
Gosh, he looked good in purple, didn't he?
He looked odd, man. I'm not going to lie. That was
he looked regal.
It was really strange to see Bill Belichick in purple.
Purple color of, royalty.
That was definitely a strange strange thing. What'd you hear about it? How'd it go?
I heard it went great. I heard that absolute people loved it. You know this. When he's not answering questions in a press conference about his personnel or a game plan, and you get that guy talking ball, you get that guy storytelling, you get that guy's history of football over 50 years, it's awesome.
Yeah.
And the tangible benefit, honestly, the tangible effect, our buddy Christian Capel, who writes here for Seattle Sports, put out the first picture, I think, of any that I saw there in the practice facility that then went viral. Had to be one of his biggest viewed tweets ever. Like, from just an exposure standpoint, that kind of hits. You know, is it the reason why the top 20, 25 running back who happens to be from Oregon's committed to Washington? Probably not. But does it hurt? Absolutely not.
Right, of course.
I mean, it's one of those things that, hey, man, the more the merrier. Oh, John Schneider's there? John Schneider's at this clinic, too? Oh, Pete Carroll's hanging around? Like, all of those things they're good looks. It's just in a perception business. Like, this is a place you want to be. This is what Pete did in the 2000s at SC, right? It was Will Ferrell. It was Snoop. It was celebrity. It was big deal. And if Jed Fish can use celebrity coaches and celebrity people, and all of a sudden those celebrity coaches maybe want to bring around a few more hot shots in football, like, all that momentum, all that perception, that's a good deal for the program.
All right, question number three. There it is. Question number three. A little upbeat.
Yeah, Maura just was confused.
Sorry.
She didn't like Bill in those colors.
I know. It got to her.
Uh-huh.
It was weird. Why weren't the sleeves cut off?
Maybe it was a gift.
Yeah, I didn't have the right. Yeah, he didn't want to cut the sleeves off a gift. It would have been disrespectful.
Did Salk cut off the sleeves of his bedazzled skull shirt the other night?
Yeah, it would have been insulting to the UW and to the, yes.
We'll
the whole
tags
family.
On there to put it back in the show.
Brock, I saw this news
yesterday.
Tavondre Sweat.
Good.
Don't like it. DWI over the weekend what does this mean for him and for Seattle?
You know, I think like anything, this is not necessarily an assault on one's character. I think this is his one, first blemish with the law, first struggle, first really, really bad decision. And by no means am I going to minimize driving under the influence, because I know there's people here that are listening to our show this morning, Salk, that have been impacted that in their own lives with friends and loved ones that have been hit by somebody that's been impaired and getting behind the wheel of a car. So by no means am I going to minimize it. It's a big, big mistake. And it's an enormous judgment mistake. Man, you're 2.5 weeks away, right, from draft day. This is the biggest time of your life. We talked about this with Carter last year, leading up to the draft and some of the decisions to be overweight and sloppy and all of this. Come on, man, this is where people are, button up. This is where you're making your case as an employee for an employer to bring you in to be a part of it.
The timing's bad.
The timing is horrendous. So, not a good look. Does that mean some of that, and he could fall into this draft? Was he a candidate for the Seahawks even beforehand? The one thing that I have learned in doing these draft profiles, I'll give you another one in an hour of an absolute stud that plays perfectly into this conversation. Because where I have not necessarily missed, but for all those that try to put together these mock drafts and prognosticate, you don't know the injury history like these 32 teams do. Mm-hmm. You just don't. No matter how hard you sleuth, no matter how much you try to read, you have no idea of the amount of detail these guys have on the character, on the self-medication of many of these players, of the injury history of many of these players. And, yeah, this is one that for Tavondre Sweat, the big D tackle who got the DWI over the weekend, it is going to hurt him in those in his future employer's eyes come draft day in 2.5 weeks.
That's today's Blue 88. Did you see this from Florio on Pro Football Talk? I don't know if this is appropriate or not. He says that Tavondre Sweat arrest should spark plenty of important questions from interested teams that might be thinking about drafting him. For example, how much did a 366-pound man drink to allegedly be impaired?
Yes.
I don't know, man. Yes. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's a fair question to ask at all.
Watching, no, it's not, and especially not now.
Also, they need to know how much alcohol he consumed, he writes. We've all seen the BAC chart, which shows the intersection between body weight and number of drinks. The more someone weighs, the more booze it takes for them to get to the legal limit.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
I know Wade Boggs. What did Wade Boggs drink? 24?
Full case of beer.
So 24 cans.
And I think he drank 24 beers on a cross-country flight.
Watching some of the big men in my life being around that scene a little bit, Salk, they would go to the Duchess and they wouldn't order glass. They would just drink pitchers.
Right.
I mean, it was pitchers and pitchers. Andre the Giant, right? The stories are renowned when he was on set of your favorite movie, Princess Bride. It was cases of wine. Cases. In order for him to get to that point. So, yeah, not appropriate, not good judgment, and not going to help that young man in 2.5 weeks.
Yeah, all very true. All right, coming up, I want to go in a totally different direction here for a couple of minutes.
Totally different?
We spoke briefly about something on Thursday that I think is a huge deal. Ooh. You were out on Friday, so I got somebody in here to tell me more about it, and now I'm even more fascinated than I was when we spoke on Thursday. I think there's something to this, and I need to know your expert opinion on it next. Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.